Well, like if I say something absolutely buck wild and bonkers, like I say, the master comes back as a dolphin. I know based off of your like face and your laugh that that is not the the master does not come back as a dolphin.
A dolphin with a little laser screwdriver.
A dolphin would really like that. And you know that they fuck for fun.
Everybody, and welcome back to a very special episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I don't know a lot about Doctor Who.
And it's our 50th episode, Cassie.
Woo!
Woo! We've been doing this way too fucking long. Woo!
Shh.
I said way too long. We're not even, we're only two doctors deep. We got three more to go right now, baby.
Not long enough.
Actually, four more to go. Yeah, this is the end of David Tennant's run here. I didn't deliberately time it out for this to be our 50th episode when we set out, but by episode 35 or so, I realized that it would be, and I was like, well, no changes can be made to the schedule now.
I know.
Yes, this is the end of time. The Christmas special.
Where does it go?
It ends. It's done.
I liked this time.
Well, we'll go get some more at the supermarket with some sage and some rosemary, parsley.
Time.
Yes, this is the Christmas special for 2009, and the second part is the New Year's special of 2010.
Interesting.
Yeah, they were released
why,
a week
why
apart.
Why is it still labeled? Oh, I guess if it's
It's part one and two. They're just it's just called the Christmas special 2009.
Well, no, but it specifically is 2009.
Yeah,
they can paint.
Yeah, just because it's the second part. Yes, this is the end of time. This is also the end of David Tennant's run. This is also the end of Russell T. Davies' run as showrunner. What sort of things are you expecting from the end of David Tennant's run from this last special, this home run that they're
about to make? The return of a character we've seen before. That's cheating. I know. This is one of the things that did get slightly spoiled for me. I know the master returns.
Yes. Well, the show also alluded to it when they said he will knock four times.
Yeah, well, because I'm also dumb, so I literally had to have you point it out to me and explain that.
Yeah, it's I felt a little bad spoiling it for you, but it was also I wanted to get your reaction in the moment. And also, I knew we were going to get there soon enough. But yes, this is the return of the Master, specifically John Sim playing the Master once again.
Remind me how we left the Master before. Oh no, he killed himself, kind of.
His wife shot him. And
he chose not to regenerate.
He chose not to regenerate, yeah.
In David Tennant's arms.
Yeah, and then David Tennant burned his body on a pyre. And the only thing that remained of him that fell off was a ring that fell onto the ground that was then picked up by a hand with mysterious red, long manicured red fingernails.
Ah. The doctor is a woman now.
Which I guess I was going to let you go on for a little. I was going to pick your brain a little bit more, but this leads into my prophecy pretty nicely here. How do you think the master comes back?
Well,
how does the master get his groove back and also his body?
Well, because that's the thing is my original thought, because I remember the ring falling and them lingering on that image for just a second longer than is necessary for, like, you know, we fade to black sort of.
Yeah. Someone reaches in and picks it up. It's not just.
It was very it was like that meme that's going around right now. That's like when the character at the end of the movie isn't dead, but it's just like an animal's paw twitching and then roll credits. Michael Bay. I've sent a couple.
What I've done.
Yeah. So my immediate response, or my original thought, was that the ring is like how Time Lords have watches, mm-hmm. that have like their memories and their Time Lordness, mm-hmm. stashed away. My first thought would be, or was that the ring has the master's like Time Lordness stashed away, and that he would come back then as a different body, in a different body.
Okay.
But since you've already told me now
that it's still John Sim,
I don't know. Because I don't know if it's something that we've been able to see yet on if a Time Lord goes back in time, if other Time Lords are still like in the vicinity, in the area, because I don't think we've seen any of that in any classic Who's, or at least none of the episodes that you've shown me showcase that. And I'm not entirely sure what the Master would have been doing. Like,
so you're thinking that this took place before he died?
Perhaps. Well, I'm trying to make it make sense here.
Let me ask you the second part of the prophecy here and see if this feeds any thoughts to the first one. When the Master comes back, he comes back kind of wrong.
Yes. Nazi.
He comes back as a Nazi.
And that's wrong indeed. He comes back.
I'm just
very
curious.
Tan and with a tuft of blonde hair.
So if any thoughts as to how the Master could come back, and also how he could come back wrong.
Well, because then we go into like, he is reformed, but he's reformed like partially as himself, but partially in a different body. Like I'm imagining, like, follow me on this journey. I'm imagining like a Franz Kafka, like giant cockroach person, but with the face of John Sims.
Okay. I mean, we could take that answer. That's what you want to go with.
But we've also never seen anything like that happen in Doctor Who before.
So without spoiling much for you, I will say this special is fucking buck wild. I don't know what substances Rusty Davies was taking when he came up with this, but it's going to feel real different from the rest of the show in a way that I'm not sure you're prepared for.
So that literally leaves everything out on the table.
Yeah.
I am looking at an I Spy book of possibilities.
So I'm like, you can really just throw spaghetti at the wall and feel out what you would do in this scenario. Because it's a little wild what actually happens.
Do I get points then if the answer is just a little bit vague,
yeah,
but
I'm
still
okay
in the ballpark?
Yeah.
Okay. Because if there are unlimited possibilities.
Like I will even give you a point if you're close enough. Like there's a few, because it's a little wacky wild what we're getting at,
like,
here.
The other option that I had was, if he's still being performed by the same actor, then it's not unlikely that he could be like in the body of a robot, something like that. But that makes a little bit of sense.
So just to give you a little bit of help, I'm also saying that for how the Master comes back wrong, there's a few different ways he comes back wrong. So there's a few different things you could say, and I would take all of them. Or I would take any of them, might be the better way to phrase that.
I don't think he is in his like regular body. I definitely think he is in the body of something else.
Okay. And how do you think he gets put in that body then?
I don't know, Zach. I'm throwing spaghetti at the wall right now.
Magic.
Yeah, fucking. That's where I'm at. You're literally giving me nothing to work from.
This was,
I don't have any other context. We've only seen like 4 seasons of this show, and never once has a character come back except for Daleks, who are cockroaches, I guess. And just
he comes back as a Dalek.
They just keep appearing. I don't understand how Daleks keep coming back, nor would I understand how the Master keeps coming back.
I will also say that in previous seasons, the Master has come back with no explanation. He has died before and he comes back anyway. And they usually don't even bother explaining it. Them doing it this time is kind of a novel approach.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I'll just say this then. Just say whatever you feel, and then whatever, if you're close enough to it, we'll give you the point at the end of
dolphin.
It.
Dolphin.
It comes back as a dolphin.
Sure, okay. Why not? You seem to laugh at that response, so okay. We'll say he comes back as an animal.
Okay.
His voice is silly. Okay. He Picasso's himself. His eyes are in the wrong spot. His ear, he's a potato head.
He's a potato
head. He's got his angry eyes, just in case. What else is a possibility in this fucked up time world? He's a ball of energy just floating around. He's only voiced by John Sims. You don't actually see his face.
Tell you what, just keep saying whatever feels good to you. And if any of what you say is right, you'll get a point.
I'm going to. E-E, that's dolphin before he comes back as a dolphin. Robot. I don't know if I said different body. He comes back in a different body.
Yeah, I'll just kick
robot. Dalek. He's a Furby this time. did I say? Oh, I said ball of energy. He's an amorphous ball of gas. It doesn't make sense. The Time Lordishness leapt from his body when he was burned in the pile. It went into the ring. It turns out he does come back. He is just he is now taken over the body of his previous wife, because she was kind of a pushover doormat wife, is now the master. Are any of these making sense?
You've certainly thrown a lot of options at the wall.
He's a cat now.
All right. And so do you have any theories as to how he might come back?
I already said some.
No, not like in what form. What was the process that brought him back?
I said his Time Lordishness leapt out of his body and leaked into something else. I think I said it just like that.
All right.
He was hooked up to a potato clock and transferred his everything into that.
Like GLaDOS from that Portal 2? Just strapped into a potato?
I don't know that reference.
That's amazing that you just picked that, that you like nailed that one on the head, though.
I'm so into potato clock, Zach. You don't even know. How are potatoes conductive of energy? You tell me.
The starch in them, I believe, carries an electric charge.
That means anything can be a...
Yeah, a lot of things can be a battery. Potatoes just have a lot of it, so they can last long enough to be like marbled
out.
There's
a lot of water, too.
Yeah.
So like a watermelon could be a battery.
He comes back as a battery. He comes back as a watermelon.
He's a watermelon guy. He's a thumb. He's one of Floop's Fooglies.
Oh.
He's doing the voiceover for Beyonce in a Austin Powers movie. He's Nathan Lane this time. You've seen Goldmember, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm just really like letting you run loose in this playpen to see what you dig out of the sand.
Oh my God, he's a puppet. Jeez, I don't think we will ever
just a Muppet master.
Yeah. He's Walter from the Muppets, but he's the master. Oh my God. He's claymation. He's like that one episode of Community. Everything is claymation to him, but he's just normal. He's Abed.
He comes back autistic.
Okay. All time lords I've got a little bit of the tism. He grows out of the ground. His soul enters the soil, and from above, he becomes a pumpkin. Like he's either shot into a body or grown into a body.
Master O'Lantern.
Yeah, I got nothing else for you. I'm fried. Well. I'm fried. Like pickles. He's Pickle Master.
Well, we'll find out if any of that was true as we watch The End of Time Part 1.
Oh my God.
Usually this is the part of the show where Cassie or I do a silly little ad for something we've made up, but seeing as this is our 50th episode, I just want to take a moment to thank you for listening and enjoying this podcast and just being really nice about everything. Everything we're hearing on social media has been really nice, which is a very strange sentence to say. There are a lot of podcasts out there with plenty with professional setups and experienced vocalists, while Cassie and I are just two chuckle fucks on our couch. So it means a lot to me that you guys choose to listen to us. So happy 50th episode, everybody. Here's to 50 more. And we are back from the end of time, part one.
Okay.
This,
okay. This, no, I'm fine. I'm really okay.
I told you this one feels real weird. Like, he had a long time to repair this one, but it really feels like he made this over like a weekend.
Like, I don't hate the fact that we missed out on several Dr. Beach episodes.
I don't know if you caught one of my favorites in there, but he said that he got married.
Yeah.
Did you catch who he said he got married to?
Queen Bess.
Which is Queen Elizabeth the First name. Because he comments that they call her the Virgin Queen. Well, implying he fucked Queen Elizabeth.
I thought they hated each other.
I mean, maybe that's why. Maybe he isn't very good at it.
Queen Elizabeth the First!
Doctor!
What?
My sworn enemy.
What?
So we'll do the prophecy real quick here, because I don't wanna
I got 2 points. I'm gonna say I got 2 points because he did get his body shot into another body.
You know, you're not wrong.
I was very incorrect with dolphin.
Yeah, it was every human.
I will confess, I was incorrect with dolphin. However,
and then he also when magic is for some reason now a real thing,
is science and science is magic, Zach.
Right, but they call it a potion of life. he casts the potion of life and he comes out of a little bottle.
You mean out of the Coven of Blondes? Yeah.
And he comes out of a little bottle like a little genie, fluctuates in and out of existence until his wife is like, hey, I had rich people pay to make the opposite of your formula. And now his body is half skeleton, which I guess it already was, but now you can see it.
Yeah.
And he
it's like half corporeal, half electric skeleton. Yeah.
He has electricity powers. He can fly.
Yep. And he only wear a hoodie.
And he's really hungry all the time. And he eats like a Smeagol.
I will say,
hunched over and grabbing all the food at once.
I did like I forget what the line is exactly, but it is Timothy Dalton doing the narration, saying that like all the pawns are in their place, the master. And then it cuts to a shot of him just going like,
I had no idea of the achievements he would do or something like that. He's just in a tube with a bone.
Yeah. It's like, that's so fucking fun. Make this man more feral.
I think I had asked you while we were recording to as you see him acting this way, remember Roger Delgado. And you had made a pretty apt metaphor.
Yeah, that he is a possum. Delgado is a fox. In more ways than and one.
And he really is kind of a possum with the way he gets like,
ah! You give him a whole like turkey.
A whole Costco chicken.
Yeah, it's a bigger bird, but I made the comparison that that's me with Costco chicken.
I think he ate the wishbone.
The last scene is of him just like eating the little bits off of a bone.
I will say, yes, I'll give you 2 points. You were close enough with when you called him a ball of energy, because I would count that as him having having his electric powers.
Yes, I would argue for that as well.
And then when you said that he gets shunted into another body, you are technically correct. He got shunted into everybody.
Yep.
Breaking news. I'm everyone. And everyone in the world is me.
I'm president. President of the United States. Look at me.
The only ones.
They're now it's no longer the human race. It is the master race.
Which, you know, that was where the idea for the episode came up. The idea was a pun based on master race, and they worked backwards from there.
Yep. They went, who would know about this? The Ood. Let's bring them back.
It's a very, like, there's so much happening.
Well, because halfway through the episode, I went, okay, cool. We must be at the halfway point. But it was only halfway because there was like, it was another moment that the narrator had come in and
when you say speaking. We must be at the halfway point, you mean we must be at the end of this part of part one?
Yes.
Okay.
Like, okay, cool. We must be reaching the end of this part. Nope. We are only halfway.
Yeah.
It's like, this is giving finale is coming up, but turns out I was wrong.
Yeah, they had so many places for Timothy Dalton to start giving narration. And I guess just to remind you that he was at the beginning, because at the beginning, you don't see a face. You just hear his voice. And in the middle, then in the middle part, you see his voice. You see his face and hear
his voice.
Yeah, you see his face and hear his voice. And at the end, they reveal who he's been the whole time. He's a Time Lord. And the Time Lords are returning.
And he does one big actor spit.
He really does. It's very some visible expectorant in that one.
But the Time Lords will return. Right after we just saw the Doctor freak out that he's the last one.
Yeah, he was worried he's the last one. Well, now there's a whole planet full of them.
Yeah, it turns out we're doing this for Gallifrey.
I do. It is kind of funny that the way that they change into the Master, though, is just by shaking their heads real fast.
Yeah. Everybody except Wilf, because he's in a protective bubble.
He's in a glass case of protection.
He's in a glass box.
To preserve his collector's value.
Yeah. The Doctor and Donna. Donna was okay.
Yeah, because Donna is half Time Lord now.
Is Dr. Donna.
Yeah. She's mentally, she doesn't remember that, but physically, she's still Dr. Donna. So
how fucking scary, though.
To watch your mother and fiance turn into the same strange man.
That you kind of sort of recognize, or at least kind of sort of recognize that this man is bad news.
Yeah. I mean, granted, I think the reason you could tell it's bad news is because when they change back, they immediately start doing a maniacal laugh. Like, and they're doing a worldwide evil laugh.
Here, loop it. You do it, I'll do it, and then you can just loop it in post. Ready? Wait, hold on. I have a scratch. I have an itch. Okay, one, two. There's something good there.
Yeah, it's very much like, because you would see them like run out of the house. And like, look at another one like, hey, you're me too. You're me too. And
then someone else. Oh, we're all the same. It's one of the reporters in the like White House press conference room was like a bigger dude. So when he turns into the Master, he just has like big old blazer flippers.
Yes. Some people's suits are too big. Some people's clothes are too small. One thing that's kind of funny. They definitely made an error with it in post, but I don't know if you caught it. I only catch it because I'm an effects guy. They replaced that guy's daughter with the Master, mm-hmm. and she was wearing heels. But for some reason, she is the same height as John as the when she becomes the Master. She's still the same height as all the other Masters, despite wearing what is clearly like 3 or 4 inch heels.
I didn't clock that.
Because they had put his head there and didn't put together he should be like 4 inches taller.
Do you know, just for my own curiosity, if they had him wearing everybody's different clothes, just standing in different spots, like
I would assume like it's Deep Roy? I would assume it's a mix. Like they probably there's very clearly some shots where they did have him doing different clothing. There are other shots where I think they just photoshopped his head onto the look.
Okay.
I think it depends on what the shot was. I think that's why he looked as short as he did in those heels, because I think they just kept her body, then did a head replacement, and then changed her skin tone to be his. Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I assume that's why, either that or they could have like had her standing there.
Well, just because it was a close enough shot that I would think that for that, and it's, you know.
Oh, no, I mean, there's a wide shot. That's where you can see it, where you can see your feet. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know the finer details.
Oh,
of it,
no, but
I
would just any of the wider shots, I would assume that it would be a head replacement. But any of the close up ones, I would hope that they would have done a deep Roy and just replaced him.
Yeah, there's definitely somewhere they did a deep Roy. Let's get into the Profassi a little bit here. You mentioned Donna already, and she's the first question of my Profassi, is that at the end, when we last saw her, she started remembering things, so getting glimpses of her life with the Doctor. What do you think?
I did specifically catch a shot of the adipose, and that alone would make my brain explode.
Or the giant spider woman.
I can forgive her. It's the adipose that I would not have been okay with.
So the first question for your Profassi of episode 2 is what happens to Donna as she starts to remember things?
Head explode? No.
Her mind gets blown.
Oh my God. Her mind definitely is getting freaked.
Chris Angel shows up.
As the master though. But he's still, somehow his hair is black and also very long.
Still wearing eyeliner.
Yeah, he's floating. Walks up a ladder horizontally. It's such a cool trick. Still don't know how it's done. It's probably wires, but let me believe in magic.
Let your mind be freaked.
I love my mind.
But how is her mind freaked? What happens when she remembers stuff?
I don't know. Because in my head, I'm like, ooh, yeah, this is like unknown territory for the Doctor, which is why he's as cautious as he is with Donna's state.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say that because Donna had always been exceptional around the Doctor, that for whatever reason, she will probably be okay. Like, I think that the Time Lord DNA that was like infused into her is enough to protect her. So I don't think she'll snap right back into like her old self, but I also don't think she's at risk for having her head explode.
Okay. So you think there's something in between. Okay. I'll take that as an answer. That's fine.
Yeah.
And then the second part of the Profassi is a little bit more intense, I suppose, of a question. As you know, at the end of this story, David Tennant regenerates.
Spoilies!
I mean, it's a spoiler, but they've also been setting up the holes for a few episodes now, and you know that's the end of the season.
Spoilies!
Which character causes him to regenerate?
Oh, no, Wilf.
You think it's Wilf?
Or Donna.
Wilf or Donna?
Yeah.
Now pick one.
I know. I would feel bad if it was Wilf. So I'm going to say Donna.
You would feel bad if it was Wilf, so you're going to say Donna?
Yeah, I feel less bad if it's Donna.
All right. So, well,
Wilf is a British national treasure. Needs to be protected at all costs.
All right. Well, in that case, the Profassi for part 2 is that as Donna remembers things, she won't die, but she also won't become the Dr. Donna again. And then at the end of this story, Donna causes the Doctor to regenerate. We will find out together as we finish The End of Time.
The End of Time!
And we are back from The End of Time and the end of David Tennant's run as the Doctor and the end of Russell T. Davies' run as showrunner. What's the feelings you got right now, Cassie?
Kind of mixed.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, it did feel a little odd that the back third of that episode was just Doctor and Friends reunion tour. Yeah,
it was their reenactment of the Return of the King.
Like,
where we've been doing this for so many years, time to show you every character we've ever written.
Mm-hmm, basically. Like, even down to the alien races.
Yeah, Zach. Like the Slitheen.
Yeah, Yeah, like the Slitheen, you know, those baby face motherfuckers I thought I never had to see again. So delighted that they were in my reunion tour episode.
They had to be part of the victory lap. It would be.
Well, they simply had to, didn't they? They were so likable and memorable.
It is funny that the only recurring characters that I don't think showed up in the intro in the ending were Daleks and Cybermen.
Well, why would they be hanging out at like the...
Yeah, I know.
You know, what's the... God damn it, I can't remember the name of the planet. Star Wars, the cantina.
Oh, Tatooine?
Yeah.
Mos Eisley cantina?
Mos Eisley, thank you. Yeah. Why else would... They wouldn't hang out at the Mos Eisley cantina. That would be... They don't socialize. They're at home writing in their diaries.
Yeah, they're too busy being catty with one another.
Yeah, they're at home working on their own, like, evil magpie journals.
Yes, that was the end of time. And I do agree that it does feel a little excessive.
Well, particularly since the jumping to the end of the episode, you do see Dave Tennant has this wonderful moment with Wilf. Where, you know, the prophecy says that he will knock four times. And the entire time you're like, surely it'll be the master. The master is who causes the doctor's regeneration.
Yeah, the knocks are in his head. It's like, that's this whole thing.
It's upsetting to me the fact that that happens. And the doctor has this long, dramatic monologue. And Wilfred has this beautiful little monologue as well. And then nothing happens for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, he gets to travel across time a few times, say bye to all his friends. And there is a part of it where it feels a little like, aren't you supposed to die sometime soon, Doctor?
It feels like it has the same energy as somebody who announces that, you know, their last day is coming up. Mm-hmm. My last day of work is Friday, but then the boss calls them in to work Saturday and Sunday as well. I was like, man, I thought your last day was
Friday. We had a party on Friday.
You said Friday was your last day. What do you mean you're still here? I've already started my mourning process. Get the fuck out. And that's how I felt. Or I was like, oh, man, he's curled up in the fetal position. His small, teeny tiny man. But then when he looked back up, I went, that's the same hair. Those are the same hands. I've gotten very used to seeing David Tennant's hands, which is a weird thing.
I feel like to
be able to clock.
And I feel like they were sort of doing a bait and switch there with him like hunched over fully like on the floor.
Well, yeah, then don't have such a long, awesome monologue beforehand. Yeah. It felt odd.
Well, what I mean by that is, so the doctor generally doesn't regenerate the same way twice, or at least hasn't up until now. The first time he literally just faded from the first doctor to the second doctor. We never actually saw the second doctor regenerate into the third. The second gets tortured by Time Lords. And the next thing we see is the third doctor just falling face first out of the TARDIS. And some of it bothers me, too, when you think about past regenerations, like when the fourth doctor regenerated into the fifth, part of his death was falling from a big height. And you know what he fucking did in this episode?
He falled from a very big height. He sugar glided off of a spaceship through a window and then landed tummy down on the floor.
Yeah, belly flopped on this nice linoleum floor.
Oh, that shit was on marble. Ever fallen? You not face first. You could have fallen ass backwards on a marble floor. Have you ever fallen on a marble floor?
On your tummy?
No, just in any regard. Have you personally?
No, I have not.
Because that shit hurts. Marble get extra hard when you fall on it.
Yeah, it's one of those where that's the last third of the episode. You kind of just have to be like, okay, we're doing a thing here. We're saying goodbye to everyone because this part of the show is over. Like there is a very real
like,
part of it where
it felt very what's the like epilogue-y.
Yeah. Which, in a sense, it is kind of it's the end of so many things. It's not just the end of Tennant's run. It's the end of the showrunner. A lot of these characters don't come back.
Which is understandable. But also, do you know how cool and interesting that would have been? It would have been a less, like, cinematic entry for Matt Smith, but if he had popped up after being exposed to so much radiation as Matt Smith, or as the epilogue is going on, you notice subtle changes. He's wearing gloves because his hands are different.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know how else they could have gone about it, but it just would have been interesting to see, like, oh, here, changes are happening slowly but surely.
Yeah, for sure. It does feel a little excessive, and there's parts of it where it feels almost like they had to come up with something just to even trim it down. Like, suddenly Martha and Mickey are married, despite having really only met at the end of the Stolen Earth two-parter.
Well, yeah, but they're both black, so they belong together.
Right. Right. That's another thing where it's also like, wasn't she already engaged to Lucifer?
They made Tom Ellis.
Yeah, Tom Ellis's character. They had made a point in the middle of season four that she was engaged to
but
Tom
she
Ellis.
Left. She left with Mickey.
Yeah, which is how you know that that's how they're in love now. They were walking away together with mm-hmm. Captain Jack.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure he has something to do with it.
You're like, now that I remind you that, you're like, oh, say less. I get it now.
Such a handsome man. Such a classically handsome man. The face of...
The face that launched 1,000 spaceships.
Yep. The face of Boson, Illinois. Still angry. I'll die angry about that.
So let's talk a little bit more about the story itself across both episodes.
My first note was literally just Gallifrey. Gallifrey. Time Lord lore. Whoa.
Yes, the first, at least for the first chunk of part two, you get your first real looks at Gallifrey.
Looks like it sucks.
Well, it's described in much the same way. Well, one, it's in the middle of war, because what we're seeing is it at the end of the Time War, and basically this is their last gambit to get out of the Time War.
The last gambit? What does that sound like?
Whew, I'm about to make a name for myself here.
Thank you.
This technically speaking takes place before the Doctor kills all the Time Lords. This is the Time Lords basically trying to escape that moment.
My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that this was the Time Lords' last ditch effort to offset their problems onto a different planet.
Sort of. It was more that they just needed a way to get back into the universe out of the little pocket dimension the Time War had cordoned itself off into.
Oh, I understand now why it was a bubble. Imagine a bubble, but don't. It's not a bubble.
Yeah.
But imagine a bubble.
It's a pocket dimension.
Gotcha.
And so what the Time Lord's plan was, is that they realized that they can't win the Time War. So instead, they're just going to end time itself. Basically, they're going to take their ball and go home. But their ball is the concept of time, which then destroys everything except for the Time Lords, who ascend to be higher beings free of cause and effect.
And corporeal forms.
And the Doctor went, excuse me, I happen to like the universe. I would like for it to stay, so I guess I have to kill all of you instead.
Well, because that he's making an argument to the Master where he's specifically saying, like, I can fix you. I can help you. Like, you can travel with me. And the Master says something along the lines of, like, ah, yes, like, rule the galaxy. And then the Doctor just goes, nope, it's just nice to look. Just to participate. Like, that's payment enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just being part of the galaxy. And you do see this, like, almost very human side of the Doctor just through that statement alone, because he's also really trying to reach out to the Master.
Yeah,
specifically the line of, you could be so wonderful.
Yeah, in the first episode especially, when he's like, well, not the first episode, the beginning, sorry, early in this episode, the Master has the Doctor strapped down to a gurney. And
I mean, oh no, It's bad. Doctor, stop.
And so the doctor keeps trying to basically get the, keeps trying to flatter the master into getting him to release him. So they can, like, just get him away. Just get him off of Earth and do something else. And so it's a lot of like, it would be such an honor to be by such a large brain as yours, until finally the doctor sees it out and goes like, oh, by the way, you're an idiot. That guard's too tall.
6 billion eyes and not one notice that this guard next to you is an inch taller than the rest. I was really hoping it was going to be Donna. I knew it wasn't, but I was a girl.
Yeah, no, Donna slept. Donna was taking a big old snooze.
I don't think I was entirely wrong because she didn't die.
No, you absolutely get the point. Something in the middle between her, nothing happening and her dying did happen. It was that her brain let out a wave of energy that knocked out everything, including herself.
Did I miss something again? Aw, Donna, I'm so sorry.
Let's just start at the very beginning, because there was a moment that I really enjoyed where saw.
We're kind of going all over the place right now.
Yeah. So let's go back to the very beginning of the first episode where
beach episode, Legend of the Blue Box.
Yeah. Where you saw a piece, a TARDIS in the stained glass window of a church.
Yes,
I had wondered how that would feel to you as someone who grew up Catholic to see this decorated church.
I have always loved stained glass windows, and just the history of stained glass windows is I will elect to shut this part of the autism down for right now. We simply do not have the time, but that is one of my favorite things about extremely old, specifically Catholic buildings, mm-hmm. is the use of stained glass, because it feels very lavish, and especially in cathedrals and, you know, a lot of places like that. Like, yes, you do want something that's very lavish. This is a house of God, literally. Mm-hmm. God resides in those spaces. So, you know, of course you would make these gorgeous windows that, in order to make the color stand out, technicians would pee on the glass. So most of the stained glass is piss glass. Which I love so much. And, you know, it's depictions of the Bible, and, mm-hmm. you know, later on, or like then when they're in castles, it's depictions of the royal court, or, you know, still biblical figures. It's angels and doves. And, you know, now it's just kind of shapes. If you see stained glass, especially if it's modern, whatever the artist wanted to make.
It's TARDIS's.
And yes, so there is a part of me that's like, I would absolutely flip my lid if I went to church again.
There was just a TARDIS, like just not front and center, but just like off to the side, just like over the bishop's shoulder. Like no one else is noticing it, but for some reason you are.
I would absolutely lose my mind. That would cause me to go to church again. Ironically enough, just so I
believe in David Tennant.
Our Lord and Savior, which is ironic.
I do believe in doctors. I do.
Which is really ironic considering that he's literally a fallen angel in Good Omens.
You also seem to be really happy that this story featured the doctor's companion being Wilfred Mott.
I do. It's about time Wilf got a treat.
Wilf got to shine. Yeah. As soon as he like walked his way onto set with his little beanie. Hey, you were just like, yay.
Well, because I knew that we weren't going to have the Donna. We weren't going to have Donna resuming her role as the companion, mm-hmm. for this. I knew that we weren't going to get that, because that wouldn't have made half a lick of sense in the context of what has already happened to her. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert. I know that those two fuckers come back for the specials. And I'm so bothered that I won't know why until much later. If you're going to do it right. Anyways. Mwah. It's not mwahaha. Have you ever started a laugh by going mwahaha? No.
When I'm feeling evil, I do.
I just feel like
feel eviler.
I just feel like a little evil guy, and sometimes I
just feel eviler. That's Zach. What
you get when you got the mwaha in your haha, and you gotta go mwaha.
Ew, the mwaha in your haha. I don't want the mwaha anywhere near my haha. Thanks.
But yes, Wilf and the entire world are apparently having bad dreams about the master.
But everybody else seems to forget.
Yeah, most people
except
seem
except for Wilf.
Like they know they had a bad dream, but they can't retain what the bad dream was.
Well, yeah, because half of the bad dream is literally just
it's just a close up on John Sim laughing really hard.
Is throwing his head back and then a close up of his eye real close to the camera.
And so Wilf has assembled a team of old folks called the Silver Cloak. They start searching all around town for the doctor. Meanwhile, the doctor is hanging out with a prayer circle with the Ood.
My favorite thing about Wilf's little club is that he's literally just gathered a bunch of retirees with nothing else to do
on a bus.
And the way that they find him is because one of the ladies calls her sister who lives across town, who asked her neighbor who saw the doctor or who saw the police box and then saw the doctor getting out of it and running east. Like, good job, Yentas. Good job.
That's
community right there, this buddy.
That's why they're the greatest generation.
Yes. Problem solvers. Not like us.
Or they're
problem makers.
Or they're awful boomer kids. Those are all different. But the greatest generation, they're the greatest generation.
I really did like the design for the Elder Ood.
Oh yeah, where he's got his brain just like showing.
Yeah. Not showing. His brain is just so big.
He's got so many thoughts and secrets
and so
in there.
So detailed. And it's busting through his skull and skin.
I feel like in any real context, that would be alarming to see someone's brain having grown so much.
No. He's 100 years old and the elder. He's fine. He's the elder. He knows what's going on.
And so the elder shows the doctor glimpses of what can pass. And it's all stuff to do with the master. And the doctor's like, no, I killed his ass. He's good. I didn't kill him. Yeah, I set him on fire, so he's done. And it's like, no, you didn't pay attention when the editor cut away and there was a ring on the ground.
I know. There was a part of me that was like, they really did just use
the same
actual footage.
Yes, they absolutely did. Didn't even bother trying anything else. That woman apparently took the ring and brought it to what appears to be a cult gathering. Where these assortment of blonde women all worship the master.
They didn't forget somehow.
Yeah, they remembered Roger Delgado's master. That's who they were expecting. They weren't expecting this fucking tweaking out.
This weasel.
Yeah, this stoat of a man.
He really is stoat-like. Like, in a way where I had even said it early on. I was like, if John Sims wasn't so damn charming, I would hate the master so much more.
Yeah, it really only works because he's a very charismatic actor who's very good at chewing scenery.
But literally, they give him a chicken.
They give him so much to chew. I will say
he's
that
he's so hungry.
I do appreciate that they went back and decided to sort of explain where these drums came from. Because when we saw Roger Delgado, there was no mention of drums. There was never any mention of the drums in the master's head throughout any of the classic series. That was a new thing that showed up as soon as John Sim's master came up. And it's because of this story where they needed... And they sort of justified it in the end that it wasn't just the master has suddenly gone insane. It's that the Time Lords put it in his head.
Mm-hmm.
And because they've done it in this sort of like, oh, they weren't there all together, but because we're the Lords of Time, we can go back and slip it in there.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's since driven the master even crazier than he already was.
Mm-hmm. It made him bleach his hair.
He's a bottle blonde. He came out of a bottle and now he's blonde. We already kind of went over the really, I thought, not great moment where to explain that his body is like acting weird. His wife apparently crafted the opposite of the potion of life.
That's stupid.
Yeah, and it's such a long, clunky exposition to explain why she has this thing and why it does what it does. Like, it's so dumb. Like, I don't know why you put that in there at all. It seemed like they realized at the climax that the Master had no way of getting rid of the Time Lords unless he has super electric powers. And so they had to reverse engineer the super electric powers.
I forget what I was watching exactly. It might have been a reel, but it was the writers of South Park talking about, like, the difference between good and bad writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, good writing has, like, this thing happens, which then causes this thing to happen, which then causes this other thing to happen.
Yeah,
But then the inverse of that is this happens, and then this happens, and then this other thing happens.
Yeah, the Matt Stone and Trey Parker, I believe it was a college lecture they did, where they said the only two words that should follow any, like, story beat is therefore or but.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, because that means that your story is, like, being led from one thing to the other, as opposed to, you know, bad writing, which is exactly what you said.
And then this happens. And then this happens.
Yeah.
Which, that moment alone was very, like, you know, oh, the Master is being resurrected. And then his wife busts out an antidote. And then he is not entirely corporeal. And then it was like, this is just a very long walk. Like, if you had just made the Master reborn, but the people that were doing the science, doing the magic behind it, didn't exactly know 100% what they were doing, because it doesn't fucking exist.
Mm-hmm.
That alone is explanation enough for having him be, like, faulty.
Yeah, absolutely. I, like, everything really to do with the Master's body kind of falling apart doesn't really go anywhere except for him having the lightning powers at the end. You know what I mean? Like,
which, just to him being reborn out of a prayer and a pile of ash. I don't know.
Because of literally a ring and a smooch. Those are the things that powered that spell.
Had just said it's because of the way that he was brought back. Now he has. So I like to use the example of Lisa Frankenstein. It's a movie we haven't watched. I've seen it. You have not seen it. In the movie, it is established very early on that there is a faulty tanning bed that, like, surges with power and causes the power around to go out. But that is the thing that is then used as a tool in the rest of the movie to electrify parts of the body that are being sewn onto our boy. Without giving out any too many spoilers, but it's just silly enough and just campy enough that it's like, okay, I'll buy it. This world is silly. I'll buy it that it's a faulty tanning bed that's causing reanimation to occur. If this had engaged in any sort of logic like that, that it was not necessarily, it doesn't have to be a faulty tanning bed. It could literally have just been, we're going to have a light bulb explode onto these remnants of the Master, and that should bring him back somehow.
Yeah.
Like, if there was anything like that, where it was some explanation having to do very loosely, very vaguely with science. But it was the fact that it was literally just, because even even magic doesn't work like that. Manifestation and spells are all, it's all in here. It's all brain power and just, it's just doing things enough and making it a habit and manifesting and willing these things to happen in your life. It's noticing patterns. It's being autistic. But it felt silly to introduce, like, fairy tale magic in a very sciencey show.
Yeah,
because it wasn't even fairy tale magic that is like, this is backed by Doctor Who science.
Yeah, where they didn't even.
We just saw a man close a wormhole with a computer.
Yeah, like, there are ways that you could like twist these into like it looks like magic, but it really is science. But no, it really just feels like that episode with the witches where they kept being like, well, words are just their form of math. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
It makes a hell of a lot more sense than a bottle.
Yeah, it makes more sense than a bottle. But it's the exact same thing where it's just like, this feels like you didn't want to come up with a reason. So you just said, it's magic.
I would have preferred them not show how the master came back at all.
I kind of agree. They're just like that. He just does that because that's what he does. He's done it so much. Like the master has died, I think, 3 or 4 times, and he just comes back anyway.
Having a flimsy explanation as to how he came back this time, it was not cool enough. It didn't need to be there.
Yeah, just skip over it. I did find it very amusing when he's like with the two. I think they were meant to be like homeless. And they were, I believe it was supposed to be like a Meals on Wheels thing where they show up to where the homeless show up to get food.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're all sitting together, the master's like, oh, I'm the master of disguise. And here I am stuck looking like the old prime minister. I really enjoyed that callback because that was the thing. Roger Delgado liked putting on masks a lot. but usually it's really obvious that it's him because he's Roger Delgado.
Yeah.
And so that it's very funny to me that he's like, oh, I'm the master of disguise. And now I look like I have the same face as always. Like, you always do that. You always look like you. You just put on sunglasses sometimes.
Yeah, but in this time, he bleached his hair. This time,
you bleached your hair. That's as much as you ever do.
And he wore a hoodie the whole time.
Yeah, he did wear a hoodie the whole time.
Which I typically... I have such a complicated relationship with hoodies because I didn't get it until I got it. Because I have one that is like, that is the hoodie. That is the only one I ever need. And I got it for free from work.
I have a very similar story where I have one hoodie that I will only ever need. And I got it for free because you gave it to me.
Yeah, because it was your Christmas present. Mm-hmm. And I bought it for you and then didn't bother wrapping it. I just threw it at you. So
my face.
Merry Christmas, you cold bitch. Put this on. He made the hoodie work. That was where that was going. Yeah. I really just appreciated the fact that this version of the master literally just looks like an internet hacker.
Just looks like
he lives in his mom's basement.
You know, you're not wrong. That is very much what he looks like.
I know I've already dissed Redditors, but he looks like a Redditor.
And so the doctor and the master have their little showdown in the quarry where they fight.
But they just keep dubbing the wasteland, which I also think is really funny.
I'm the king of the wasteland.
Like, where are you? What part of London is this?
Like, I feel like you guys are just, that's just where people work.
Yeah, you guys are on an active construction site.
I am king of the wasteland. Hey, buddy, you got to move. We're bringing in some sand over here. I'm king of the wasteland. All right, king. Well, you're going to be buried in sand if you don't move.
I mean, that's what it felt like.
Got to put up some I-beams right where you're standing, chief. So I need you to move. Not chief, the master. All right, whatever you say, boss. You need to move. Not boss. So they're having their little showdown in the quarry.
Oh, my God. I forgot all about that until I looked at my notes. Good job, me. When the master just starts a listing off, it's Christmas Day for the humans. That means beef and cakes and juice and fat and cream and
red wine and
red wine. And then
blood red hot, 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 hot.
As he's listing off, the only thing I heard was food, glorious food. We're anxious to try it.
Guy, he really was.
Why do they have to list so much food?
And why is it edited so manically?
Because he's a madman. Just
it feels like it sort of betrayed them. I feel like they cast John Sim because he sort of looks like an evil David Tennant. They're both about the same height. Both very like shockingly skinny.
He's
men.
Like the round version of David Tennant.
Yeah, David Tennant's all squares and John Sim is all circles.
Yeah, David Tennant pointy.
Yeah, and so they
John Sim's
and then they wrote these scenes in where he's supposed to be just like devouring whatever is put in front of him.
Rabid.
Because he's such a scrawny little man. he doesn't eat that much.
He do just kind of look like a hyena on the savannah.
So, yeah, they have their little fight in the quarry until suddenly a helicopter comes in and abducts the master.
Yeah, a beam of light, and the master just kind of lets it happen.
Which I think is because he wants to get away. He wants to get away from the doctor and just like do his own thing. He's like, well, this might as well happen right now. Meanwhile, the doctor just gets knocked out and left on the rocks.
Oh, my favorite is that when they take him to the mansion, the master is fully wearing a dog collar.
Yeah, he's being
a red dog collar attached to a leash.
Yeah, which I assume is that. Ha! I was going to say, I assume it's that guy's punished.
We need handcuffs, sir. No, we don't. I have something. It's perfect for this.
Yes, the master is abducted by Joshua Naismith, who is also quite a handsome man. Oof. I know him as playing John Jones, the Martian Manhunter from Supergirl. I don't think you've probably seen him in anything, but that's how I know him outside of this show. And he apparently wants to make his daughter live forever using this alien machine that they found that they've decided to name the Immortality Gate.
Yep, that's his gift to his daughter. Your gift to your daughter is to watch everyone she knows and loves die?
I mean, the daughter seemed a little unhinged. I don't know that she has that many people that she knows and loves other than her father.
Still, could you imagine if somebody was like, happy merry birthday present, Zach.
I've granted birthday. You. Thank you very much.
Immortality. Here you go. Also, me, the person who gave this gift to you, is going to die in like, maybe 30, 40 years.
I will say they're doing some interesting. There's some interesting things that are going on with that dynamic, at least. One, that there is no mother. So you can presume that the mother has died. And part of this like immortality thing is in response to that.
Can I say something?
Sure.
They didn't look like father and daughter. I fully thought that she was supposed to be wife until they specifically said daughter. And I went, huh?
Yeah, I think sort of the idea was that they seem a little off.
I only knew she was daughter because she was wearing pink, the color of youth and innocence.
I mean, it doesn't help that David Harewood has a very like
very old man, young face. Yes.
Yeah, he's got a very young face is kind of what I was going for.
But old man.
Yeah.
Like he would make a perfect elf.
But there is something to be said that, you know, the story ultimately starts with the doctor also running away from his own mortality. Like when he shows up with the Ood, it's because he went on several adventures.
And the Ood's going, it's too late, bitch.
Yeah, you really should have gotten here sooner.
We sent you this signal a while ago. Things are already in motion.
Yeah, so there's definitely something. I mean, there's something thematically with that idea of characters trying to escape death. Because you've got the master who did die and escapes death. You've got this daughter who wants the immortality gate to escape death. The Time Lords all trying to escape their own death. And the doctor himself also trying to escape death. Like there's an interesting theme through line there. It's not very well executed, but it's there.
Yeah, you could write a paper about that.
We were actually sent a video essay on Twitter. Someone wanted me to watch. It's like I didn't want to show it to you because it had spoilers in it, not just for this but for future stuff too, so I can't show it to you.
I don't get to watch a video essay.
Your favorite thing. I'm that kind of dork.
You're just way more interested in other people's hyperfixations. I'm more of a visual person. If your video essay has anything to do with historical costumes, yes, I'm there.
You're too interested in your own hyperfixations to be interested in anybody else's.
1 year later, I'm still thinking about Baldur's Gate.
And so one of my favorite moments at when the master is talking with Naismith, with Joshua, he goes, I like you. You taste great.
Yeah, he's so fixated on how people on food and eating and.
And then until the episode is over, then he promptly forgets that.
No, it happens again in the second part.
When is that?
I can't, in the alley, when Dawn is surrounded, they go, "We're so hungry." I am going to insist you never do that again.
You didn't like you my...
Can, I don't know how it sounded for the folks at home. I was too fixated on your teeth and lip combo.
You didn't like my Hannibal Lecter impression? Stop it.
No.
Fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Zach, I need you... Fun fact, I never seen that.
It's a good movie. You should watch it sometime.
I know. I would like it.
And so... Naismith asks the master to fix the immortality gate for his daughter, and the master does just that. Meanwhile, the two aliens that are there to pick it up are two little green cactus people, as Wilf calls them, known as the Vinvaci.
The Vinvaci.
The Italian cacti. The doctor then bursts into the mansion, like trying to stop him, just in time to find out that the master has already seen his plan through. He's already fixed the immortality gate, and which fixes whole planets, according to the Vinvaci, which seems ill thought out as a device in general.
Yeah. I thought they were going to say, because somebody had made a comment of like, that's an awful lot of space for one person. And they went, oh, this can. And I went, that makes sense. It can heal several people at a time. Entire planets.
Nope, whole planets. Well, would have been funny.
That doesn't make sense.
What would have been kind of funny to me is if they had been like, yeah, whole planets. But then we find out that a Vinvaci planet or
there was the size of our moon.
Yeah, it's like the size of the moon. So it only goes through like part of the world. All like Americans are untouched and China's untouched, but like all of Europe is messed up. And all the Americans are just like, what the hell's going on over there?
It's like all of Europe, part of Northern Africa. And like the western side of Russia.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been kind of funny.
Greenland, Maine. Only Maine.
Only Maine. And I guess Newfoundland. And so the master reveals that his plan was to jump in the machine himself and
broadcast himself into every person.
Yeah, and create the master race. What a pun. What a clever
pun. What a good name. Original. Well thought out.
It was definitely something that one of them just like thought up.
And it feels like when I have a funny joke that's only funny for like maybe half of an intro, i.e. the Walters of Marlboro. That is not funny.
It's at least as funny as the Master Race.
Yeah.
And they put that shit on television.
It doesn't help that he's there. This was the first time I was like, wow, it's a good thing he doesn't have blue eyes, or else the Master Race would be blonde hair, blue eyes. Yikes.
And so the way everyone becomes the Master, as we said this in the middle, but I still really like the way that they all change is just by shaking their heads real fast.
Like wet dogs.
I like to imagine that's the noise they were making as they shook back and forth.
It has to be. What other noise could you make, Zach? Shaking your head around.
Woo!
Nah. Whee! Stop. You're alerting the bean.
Sorry, bean.
And her bushel of paws. Look at them.
But then we start into episode two where Donna's head explodes to save herself.
Yeah, as she's having like a full on like existential meltdown.
It's not just that. I can see those things again. Those creatures. Why can't I see a giant wasp?
So we're caught up to where we were talking about before with the doctor strapped to a gurney and then having to be chased out of the building by the Vinvaci.
I do really like that it's one of the first and maybe only times that the doctor has been physically vulnerable.
Yeah.
So like, he is at the mercy of everybody else around him.
He's even going like, not the stairs.
Oh my God. I love it. I love a good physical comedy moment.
the doctor, the Vinvaci, and Wilf all escape on the Vinvaci ship, which is just like, apparently supposed to just gather like junk from space, like spaceship junk, to take back home.
Oh, because they're scavengers.
Yeah, they're scavengers. But the ship gets all wrecked up by the doctor doing his stuff.
Yeah, the ship doesn't get wrecked up. The doctor wrecks the ship.
And so they just kind of have to peter around on the ship for a little bit while the master is
petering around
the world. Well, I do enjoy that when he becomes President Obama, part of the story is that Obama's about to end the financial crisis that was happening. And he had some sort of financial saving algorithm, I guess. And the master's like, oop, I just erased it. I'm like, you can do that? I wish I could do that. There are so many like intrusive thoughts I would just delete if I could.
Oh, I do. But then it comes at the cost of me deleting actually important information. Like people's birthdays. I don't remember that shit unless I write that down.
That's the entire reason Facebook exists now.
The nightmare I had as a kid where I was playing in the front yard and a person in a yellow bug drives up and just nabs me right out of my yard. I remember that clear as crystal. That just scared me so bad.
Throughout the both episodes, there's this woman that keeps appearing to Wilf and basically telling him what to do to keep the plot going. And they never explain who she is.
Yes and no. Because you do see her at the Time Lord Council as seemingly a human weeping angel.
Yeah, she's one of the only two Time Lords that voted against the action to basically destroy Earth at the expense of their own lives.
But she's also telling Wilf that he has to be at arms.
Yeah,
and to be prepared.
I do find it kind of amusing that near the end of the episode. Wilf goes, that woman, who was she? And the doctor just doesn't answer, which tells me they did not have an answer.
No.
I will tell you, there are some fan theories. One of them is that is Susan, the doctor's granddaughter. The main reason that doesn't hold up for me is that the doctor does not respond to her in that way. And the other theory people have is that is the doctor's mother.
I also got those vibes. That feels like wild.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it doesn't really matter which one of them is true, if either, because it doesn't change anything really. They do have one really nice discussion on the ship, which is between Wilf and the doctor, where Wilf keeps trying to hand the doctor a gun.
Not a gun, his gun.
Yeah, he brought a gun with him because the woman told him to basically get strapped, motherfucker, you're gonna go on an adventure today. I did like, just going back to the soldier thing, in this moment, they established that Wilf was in the same event in Palestine that Bernard Cribbins was. They basically translated that from the actor to the character,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was kind of neat, because then it means as he's giving this like speech about him seeing combat, he can do it from his real place, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to fake it being about World War II or something.
Yeah.
Because I think they had kind of alluded to that being the case, that he was a World War II vet. And then this one, they were like, no, we're going to retcon it so that it's the same thing Bernard Cribbins did.
Mm-hmm.
But they keep having this back and forth where Wilf keeps making these really strong cases of like why the doctor should take the gun, like do it to protect yourself, do it to save the humans, he just like, don't put the master ahead of us. Like we're better than him. He's a bad guy. You can't put him ahead of the entire human race. And every single time the doctor pushes it back until suddenly the Time Lords are like, hey, we need a physical thing to send to be our like beacon there. And so they're like, okay, we're going to throw this little diamond through the diamond. And then the master's like, hey, doctor, Time Lords are coming. I'm going to come.
I've got a shiny thing.
Look at me. I'm a possum and I got my shiny.
Ooh, I'm going crow mode. I got my shiny thing now. You better run, Ducky.
And it's going to bring the Time Lords. And saying it's going to be the Time Lords is finding what brings the doctor to be like, to take the gun. After a full like 5 minutes of saying no, never, I will never do that, that is as soon as it's like, hey, the Time Lords are coming, the doctor's like, give me the gun. Give me that gun.
Fuck.
And you know, Wilf makes the point of like, isn't it good that all your people are showing up?
Like, you make them sound so great. And the doctor says, yeah, that's how I like to remember them.
Which, you know, that's real. That's legit.
Well, because like, I think specifically about like when somebody has died, or like if you have a friendship that doesn't live forever,
mm-hmm.
there's the argument of like, well, wouldn't it be nice to just see them one more time? And it's like, no, you kind of, it's better to just remember them as they were. Keep all of the positive, good, squishy, fluffy memories. Mm-hmm. Because that is what you carry with you the rest of your life. But then also to negate that, it's like, the Doctor specifically says that the Time Lords are worse than any enemy that they have fought ever.
Mm-hmm. Especially in that moment, because what the Time Lords want to do is erase all of existence so they can ascend to godhood, effectively. And the Time Lords come in to do exactly that. Apparently, all of the Time Lord High Council has agreed to this plan, except for two of them, including the woman we mentioned earlier. And the Timothy Dalton, who is playing Rassilon, the president of the Time Lords, says that they will hide their faces in shame like the weeping angels of old. And that sparked an interesting theory I'm curious about your thoughts on. Are weeping angels former Time Lords?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, we did see the two like ladies that were covering their face like weeping angels. Mm-hmm. But also them looking up didn't seem to have any life or death repercussions.
Yeah, there were the theory is basically that there's
Weeping angels themselves can send you back in time.
Mm-hmm. The theory is basically that becoming a weeping angel is sort of like the death penalty from a Time Lord. Like, you can't regenerate anymore. You're stuck in this like you're stuck in like fragments of time where you can only move and things aren't looking at you. Like, it's a very interesting idea.
I like it, though.
It is kind of neat.
It's scary.
And so Rassilon and the other members of the council show up. They just appear. They just poof into the room with the master. And as we established, the Doctor decided to jump out of the ship to enter this room and crash through a glass ceiling onto the marble floor. That was only
after we did a round of Smuggler's Run.
Oh, you're right. I totally forgot to mention. The writer doesn't seem to think very highly of NATO's missiles, because they say that they sent basically all of NATO's missile capacity at the Doctor, and they're defeated by a green guy and one old man.
They did say that the ship is equipped with like motion sensing, like lasers, so they have to do is fire them. But also, Wilf is in a literal spacecraft. We just saw him marveling at the wonders of outer space not moments ago. Do you think he has the capacity to shoot a moving target in a moving ship? That is not moving laterally. It's everywhere,
all around the place. But yeah, so they have their little shooting round of Smuggler's Run, and the Doctor jumps out of the ship and crashes through the ceiling of the building, mm-hmm. landing hard on the marble floor. And I can't help, and I know I told you about some of the other ways the Doctor has died. One includes falling off an exercise bike.
I thought it was a horse.
No, he was on an exercise bike. Granted, it was the reason they had to do it was because Colin Baker, when he left the role, he was basically fired early and was then asked to come back for the regeneration. And he went, no, fuck you guys. And so all they had was the new actor wearing a wig. And so they shot him from the back, and then the TARDIS shook a little hard and the exercise bike with him on it fell over and he bonked his head real hard. But for some reason, falling off an exercise bike triggers regeneration.
He bonked his head real hard.
Yeah. Falling stories from the sky through a glass ceiling onto a marble floor does nothing.
He's scrappy.
Earlier in this episode, he was hit by lightning to the chest.
He's scrappy.
He must be, because good Lord. And so the Doctor is immediately like telling the master about how bad this is that they're coming. And he lists some other things that are going to come across with the Time Lords, because the Time Lords won't just be the only thing coming across from the Time War. He says it's not just the Daleks. It's also, and I quote, the Skaro degradations, the Horde of Travesties.
Me and my friends when we go to the mall.
The Nightmare Child.
Me in my room alone.
And the could have been king with his army of meanwhiles and neverwheres.
You, Bailey and Monty.
Monty is the could have been king here. I'm the meanwhile. Which is, there's a lot of stuff that they just dropped there with no context. Those are just bad things that were happening in the Time War.
The nowhere child?
Yeah, or the nightmare child. Yeah, it's...
I mean, that might actually be Monty.
Yeah, the doctor's saying, like, hey, this is what's happening, this is a problem. And the master's like, well, it's fine, because I'm going to turn all the Time Lords into me lords. You can't spell Time Lords without me.
Into me lords.
And so
pick number three, me lord.
And I really enjoy that, like, as he's explaining their plan, Rassilon's just like, bitch, what? I've got a time glove. And
he got a gauntlet.
You understand I'm God, right? I'm your God. And he closes his fist and all the humans turn back. And one of my favorite things about them turning back. So this story so far has taken place over at least 24 hours. Everyone changed. The diamond fell at night, and then at the next day, the master said, I've been working all night to acquire the diamond. So it's been a full day since then, but most of the people are still standing exactly where they were when they first changed. Obama is still in front of his podium. Donna's fiance and mom are still standing in the kitchen.
My thing would be that if it's the master who is, like, controlling everybody, there is a good chance that he only has the ability to communicate with, like, one to four other, like, figureheads.
I don't think they were, like, communicating in that way. Like, that wasn't, like, telepathic control of them. It was that they all became the same person.
Yeah, so if... Because even he did not move very far.
Yeah.
He did not venture far outside of the mansion.
I just like to imagine that the master that was Obama just keeps giving a presidential address from that podium for a full 24 hours.
I mean, I would... You don't tell me what to do. I will continue doing what I had been doing for several minutes.
Like all of them became NPCs and they just had to.
Yes.
They had to go through their cycles. Because that one lady was still on television after a day. It was just very funny that I don't think they just thought that through at all. They just went, OK, we have this footage already. We'll just play it in reverse. Not thinking about how, oh, this should be like the next day. They should have at least like sat down for dinner. Some of them should have, like, laid down for bed. I just had a thought, Cassie. At one point, Wilf asks the doctor if thing has changed even people in their graves. And the doctor's response is basically, yeah, it kind of did. Does that mean there are some master babies? Just like some little babies in cribs, little toddlers waddling around in their diapers that just had their heads shake violently.
Like Colin Robinson in that one season of What We Do in the Shadows.
Exactly.
Yep. Yep, I fully think that.
and it was that they clearly all changed sizes. So does that just mean that he like just popped and like and ripped open all those kids' clothes that are just like laying on the floor or like burst open a crib?
Yes.
Wah. Wah?
Goo goo ga ga?
Goo goo ga. Hungry!
It's very good.
Oh, master baby.
That is one sound away from a different...
Hey, I'm just the master baby.
No. But you know that there are some people that were caught in the middle of that, too. Are very shocked when they stood up and went, I did feel bad, though, as the master is after everybody's turned back into themselves and he's angry with the Time Lords, just saying, you made me.
You did this to me.
You did this to me. All of my life.
Like, oh, yeah, like they ruined you.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, he did just threaten to convert all of them into him as well.
Well, yeah.
But also, yes, that what they did to him is incredibly fucked up.
Nature versus nurture, dude.
Yeah, they went like, what if we tortured this child
forever
for hundreds of years?
Because the Master is also very old. He's at least as old as the Doctor, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking 900 years. They decided we're just going to throw this little taunting noise in the back of your brain. It'll torture you, but it'll let the rest of us. It'll let me feel better in a few years when we get stuck. It'll let us out. It'll let us out of this little room that we trapped ourselves in.
That is so crappy.
Yeah. But because of that, the Master fights Rassilon as Gallifrey disappears, presumably taking the Master with them.
It's the Doctor standing in the middle between the two with a gun, having to choose between
siding with the Master or siding with the Time Lords.
Yeah, Lord President or Master. And then when he ultimately makes his decision, him just saying, get out of the way.
Yeah, I kind of went, duck. Where's the duck? I'm hungry.
I just love get out of the way.
Yeah.
Because that is the ultimate, like, he truly doesn't want anybody to, he does not want to actively kill anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He will have other things do that for him.
Yeah, it was very, there are very good beats in this story. It overall is kind of a mess, but there are still good beats in it. And that is one of them, where the Doctor is having to seemingly do this mental dance back and forth as he has to choose between these two impossible options. Because he doesn't really want either of them to win, but at the moment it seems like one of them will have to. But yes, as Gallifrey disappears with the Master and Rassilon fighting, it appears that the Master faded away with Gallifrey. So who knows if we'll see him again?
You know.
Well, you don't know if we will or not.
No, I don't.
And the Doctor is left on the floor, realizing that he made it. He's still alive after all. All those knocks, people knocking four times, that didn't matter. He made it. He's alive. He survived. And then you hear, thunk, 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 thunk.
On the glass.
Thunk, 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 thunk.
Wilf went in there to protect himself.
And I think he does that knock of four times too. So there's two different ways he's knocked four times. As soon as you hear it, there is a part of you where your heart breaks a little bit because you know what's about to happen.
Yeah.
Like, even if you don't know that Tennant's about to regenerate, you kind of know in that moment. And I really like this, like, monologue he has to himself where he's really upset because he knows that he is more important to the universe than Wilf on like a broad scale level.
On a cosmic scale, he is more important.
Yeah, but to him, the thing that makes him important is that he will save Wilf. And so he does.
Well, because he's also had this, like, ongoing crisis about how anytime he regenerates, yes, he is the same, but he is not the same. And so each time he regenerates, like, any of the things that he's learned, any of the progress he's made, the connections he's forged, all of that gets lost.
Yeah, and
he does die with each generation.
And it's really effective coming from Tennant too, because we just saw him, like, last at the end of the season, refuse to regenerate. So when he at the end of the episode, when he says, "I don't want to go," you know he doesn't.
No.
And he put it off as long as he physically could.
Yeah, where did the regeneration start? His hand.
So yeah, he has this moment where Wilf is saying, No, you should live, you should keep going, you should move on.
I've lived my life, I'm an old man.
Yeah, and the Doctor goes, "Wilf, it would be my honor." And I don't know about you, but I was certainly crying.
My eyes were itchy, and I was thinking about how itchy my eyeballs were. So, no, I was not crying. I wasn't crying.
My eyeballs were itchy.
No, Zach.
My eyes hurt.
Zach, I need you to understand. I don't cry.
I'm not crying.
During this show.
Somebody just put tears on my pillow.
My eyes were itchy. I need you to understand. It is allergy season. In our city.
So the Doctor steps into the chamber that Wilf is stuck in, gets Wilf out, and then absorbs 500,000 rads of radiation, I believe they say.
I don't know how much that is.
It's pretty radical.
Boo.
And so the doctor steps out and they basically I think it's just an excuse to what the doctor hit would not kill him immediately. It gives him enough time to say goodbye to everybody.
They basically give the doctor cancer.
Yeah. And so the doctor, as we've said, goes on his goodbyes tour to everybody we've ever seen in any of the shows. Any character that he's interacted with positively from, at least ones that are still alive, from Rose, Mickey, Martha, Donna's family,
Captain Jack,
Sarah Jane, Alonzo from Voyage of the Damned. He visits.
Who is the author?
So that was the granddaughter of the woman from the Family of Blood two-parter when the doctor was John Smith.
Okay.
Yeah. They have the same actress playing her. And that was why she asked, was she happy in the end? Because that was the woman that he would have been with had he stayed as John Smith. I thought it was a nice touch to bring her in. That was sort of a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like that was from Davey's perspective, I think that was one of the most important episodes they had.
Yeah.
I really think that was a nice one to bring together. At the end of the goodbye tour, he sees Rose and Jackie. And Jackie walks off to go get drunk and presumably sleep with somebody. And the doctor says hi to Rose. It didn't really seem like he wanted to say hi. He just sort of convulsed involuntarily. And Rose thought he was having had drank too much for a New Year's. And then Rose reveals that the year is 2005. The year she meets Christopher Eccleston.
You're going to have a good year.
You're going to almost die a lot. But then at the end of it, you're going to turn into a god for a minute. That'll be kind of neat.
And then you'll go to another planet with your dad.
Yeah, you'll go to another dimension with your dad.
Sealed away from all of your friends, only some of your family. And then later on, I will give you a clone of myself.
Oh, wait, sorry. The parallel dimension stuff is next year. So you're going to have a really great year this year. Next year might suck a little bit, though. The doctor realizes he's regenerating and he makes his long walk back to the TARDIS, where an Ood shows up to say, the universe will sing you to your sleep. Hello, I'm the universe, here alone on this snowy street.
Here, let me hook up my waterproof shower speaker to my shirt lapel.
It has Bluetooth to the rest of the universe. So if you only hear one voice, just know that we're all perfectly in sync. he steps inside, sees his orange, the tang coming out of his body again. And he says,
I don't want to die.
He does one little short lap around the TARDIS console and goes, I don't want to go.
I don't want to go.
Aww. And then explodes.
And then in an instant turns into Matt Smith.
Yes, Matt Smith, the youngest actor to ever play the Doctor.
How old is he?
Would you like to take a guess how old he was in that scene?
26.
He was 26. You are absolutely correct.
Whoa.
Yeah, he is the youngest actor to ever take on the role of the Doctor. He was 26 at the time. Breaking the record of David Tennant's father-in-law, Peter Davison. So it's very interesting that he...
They just keep getting younger and younger.
Yeah. He's still the youngest to this day.
But everybody who has met the Doctor in any form
keeps commenting on how young
he is. I think it's only Sarah Jane that has been able to say, they just keep getting younger.
Yeah, Stephen Moffat had wanted an older actor to play the Doctor, but as you'll see, Matt Smith carries with him both. He's very young, but he carries with him a very old soul, which you do not get at all from his opening scene where he is marveling at how many fingers he has.
It's like he's seeing fingers for the first time, which I guess he kind of is again.
Yeah, he's seeing his new hands,
two legs, a chin.
Blimey. I really enjoy that they made the actor acknowledge that he has a giant chin. There was apparently a bit of controversy when he yells out, still not ginger. Some people thought he was celebrating the fact that he is not ginger, and people took offense to that. Because some people had forgotten in the beginning of David Tennant's run, he had asked if he was ginger because he always wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all of David Tennant's run. culminating with Matt Smith crashing, as he says. I don't want to, I know it's kind of late for us here, so I don't want to make you go on too long, but I am curious, how are you feeling about David Tennant's run overall?
I didn't like the beginning.
Okay.
It felt a little odd to me to have him take such a 180 turn from being this, like, war veteran, like, traumatized man just trying to pull things together and make things okay.
Mm-hmm.
To then being like an automatic, like almost sex symbol.
Yeah.
It's a very odd choice, particularly since like this is coming from a place of like David Tennant is a very attractive man. He's not conventionally like kick your shoes off handsome.
Yeah. I'm sure to somebody he is, but.
Well, yeah, but it's also in performance, how he holds himself. You know, if he can speak in his normal accent.
Yeah, if he's Scottish, then it all bets are off at that point. But when he's having to do a bad English accent.
So there is a part that's like, I understand why so many people like him as the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting on my Doctor.
Okay.
I don't think he's it. Now, he was the one I was the most excited for.
Okay.
Because I think he was the only one that I really knew of.
Okay.
Matt Smith is another one that I know a lot of people like,
mm-hmm.
but.
Because I will say Matt Smith is my favorite Doctor.
That was not the part of the internet that I was on during that time.
Yeah.
And especially by the time that I got to college, a lot of the people that were Doctor Who fans that I was surrounded with were older than me, so presumably their doctors would have been Tennant and Matt Smith. So
that was the height of the show. I think was 10 and 11, and 11 is unquestionably my favorite. I'm not going into this expecting him to be yours. I mean, I'll be happy if he is, but I'm not. I'm trying not to have any expectations for who will or won't be your ultimate like landing place for you, like when we find your Doctor. I do like that the end of his series does show just how many characters that didn't just like they not just characters that you like got to know and really got to appreciate their existence, but that got to continue stories after.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of them would come back. Some of them, I shouldn't say some of them, all of them came back at some point. A couple of them even got their own shows. They clearly have like these lives that they're living when the show isn't featuring them.
I do like that after a time, David Tennant does get to bring back some of that like traumatized war vet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do get to see some more vulnerability, and especially with Donna,
mm-hmm.
like we see a very different Doctor than we did with Martha or Rose.
Yeah, and it feels it's still this like war vet guilt that he's carrying, but he portrays it differently than Eccleston in a way that I think is really interesting. But I'm very excited for us to keep going on to Matt Smith, because he is my favorite Doctor, and this upcoming season is also my favorite season of the show.
No spoilies.
Yeah, no spoilies, but
we know how I get when things are. These things are too hyped up.
Yeah, I'm not going to hype them up too much because it's not a perfect season, but some of my favorite stories are in it.
Yeah, you've already this show has already been a roller coaster ride of I have not been thoroughly impressed.
Okay.
Not in the way that I would expect to for a show that has such a long history attached to it.
Yeah.
I will say I think I'm biased because I've become quite fond of the classic stuff that we've watched together.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wonder if that also has to do with it, of if you were younger growing up watching, having your parents show you Classic Who, and then, you know, you get to now grow up and you have your own new stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that also plays a big part in it, whereas I am coming in with fresh eyes.
I mean, I came into the show on the new series, although I was like 19 at the time. So there could still be something of like, I was still very young.
Yeah, but you were also very single and a dork.
Moving past that.
Am I wrong?
No, that was very true. But let's talking about the classic doctors. So you've got four doctors under your belt so far. You've got 3, 4, 9, and 10. I mean, you got a little sampling of 5, but I'm not going to count that yet. Yeah. How would you, of those four, do you want to give a little cursory ranking? Like, you don't have to go into detail for it. I'm just curious if you have opinions on top to bottom so far.
No, not particularly.
Okay. They're all just kind of in the same.
Just kind of in the same vacuum.
Okay.
Like, aesthetically, 4 has been my favorite, but Of course he was.
You're going to get a quirky guy with a big hat and a doofy scarf. Yeah, of course that's going to be your favorite.
Yeah, you have a big oaf of a man with curly hair and big dumb hat and a hand crocheted scarf. Like, of course I'm going to like that the most.
Well, I guess if that's the case, then we'll just have to keep going and see if maybe Matt Smith stands out for you against these other four.
We'll see.
We'll see together on future episodes of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Hi, kitten.
Fifty episodes, four doctors, so much more to go, and I am really enjoying this ride that we are all on together. I want to specifically thank friends of the pod, Tony Goldmark, host of Escape from Vault Disney, and Jesse McAnally of the Cheese Wheel podcast for being substantially larger podcasters than we are and using their precious podcast time to promote our silly little show in these early days. It has been so helpful to us, if even just in boosting our fragile, fragile egos. You can also help us out by subscribing to this podcast and giving us a like or 5 stars wherever you're listening right now. Even Podbean. We see you little Podbean freaks out there, and we appreciate you. If you're a social media freak, you can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. Next week, we get to start the journey of the 11th Doctor, my doctor, Matt Smith. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because even after regenerations, your Tuesdays are still Who's Days.